BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Baseball is back.
He doesn't want a super spreader out there in the middle of the field.
The season is different. On the field, in the socially distant clubhouse, in the empty stands.
You guys wanted to do it. You've been wanting to do it for months.
There's a lot to talk
about.
Who
are you kidding? Don't give me all that bull crap.
And this is the place to do it. This is the Baseball Reporters with Tony Mass.
Brought to you by Big Y, Safety Insurance, Rodenheiser Home Services, Woodbridge Wines, Gravely, Budweiser, and Jackson Lumber.
On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Okay, Red Sox fans, here we go. Countdown's at 6. You got that, Jim Murray? Countdown is at 6.
Oh, believe me, I'm marking the calendar.
6. Yeah, it's like a stay of execution. We're waiting to be paroled here on the Baseball Reporters. Scratching the days off the cell block wall. 6 episodes of the Baseball Reporters remain in the 2020 season. 2 weeks from now, the Red Sox will be gone. They will be erased from our memory forever, but as long as they're here, we have to talk about them. 617-779-0985. I'll ask Jimmy Stewart, our producer, to open up the phone lines right away. And again, you've got 6 shows. If you're a Red Sox fan, 6 shows. Tonight, the 5 days next week, and then that's it. Baseball will be erased from the landscape in 2020 with the hope that it could be better in 2021. Maybe. How about this? I stumbled across this. Let me just say quickly, by the way, Murray, before I get to this. You know, as Mike Felger just said before he departed here, the New York Yankees are in town?
I didn't know that until I had to go through and start writing the headlines earlier today. I really didn't. No idea coming in that they were playing them.
That's right. The Red Sox are facing the New York Yankees. Typically, there was a time, once upon a time, where we would drop everything.
It's appointment TV, it used to be.
To talk about the Red Sox and Yankees. Now, they don't even exist. Martin Perez on the mound. It feels like the Red Sox are heading for a beating this weekend. With the Yankees in town. Yankees are starting to hit again. I think they've won eight or nine in a row. They've scored 43 runs in the last 3 games against the Toronto Blue Jays. They absolutely annihilated the Blue Jays. So then I stumble on this today by Alex Speer in the Boston Globe. And Alex Speer, by the way, will join us in the next segment because he had an interesting story earlier in the week that I touched on about the Red Sox inability to develop pitching. And I think it's really a development issue, or at least the story suggested that. And, which is something I want to talk to Alex about, because I think it's, people sort of lump drafting and talent all into one big pile. And it's great to get talent in the draft. You need to get talent in the draft. But the question is, then what do you do with it once you get it here? What do you do with that talent? Do you have a chance to cultivate it and turn it into something real or not? But here's what I'm starting to worry about. I want to, again, start with this. Alex Speer's story in the Globe today with this headline. Red Sox are already wary about Eduardo Rodriguez for 2021. They are already worried about Eduardo Rodriguez for 2021. And the reason I think this should garner your attention is obvious. Chris Sale isn't going to pitch probably till middle of May, maybe June, or even later next year. If Eduardo Rodriguez can't pitch next year, think of what that does to your postseason or your offseason pitching plans. In other words, what you have going on now might not just be the beginning and end of it. You might not just be looking at 2020 going, okay, well, they had some injuries. It was a little bit of a bad break, and then they caught some bad luck with Eduardo Rodriguez, which they did. What if it spills over into 2021? What if it now becomes the same thing a year from now when you have to play 162 games? And which brings me back to the offseason and how the Red Sox are going to approach it and whether or not ownership gets in Chaim Bloom's way and whether at some point the Red Sox are going to face with the reality that they have to go out and make some sort of significant move in this offseason if they want people to watch the team in 2021. This is a scary thing with Eduardo Rodriguez. And I would tell you that it's scary to put any amount of burden on Eduardo Rodriguez anyway, because of his history. He had a fabulous year in 2019. But now he's not going to pitch in 2020. And prior to 2019, he was inconsistent. So Spear asked questions about Rodriguez and where he is in his recovery from COVID. And if you remember, he got myocarditis, which is inflammation of the heart, and was due to see doctors in Boston earlier this week. So Spear writes, and there's actually a quote in here from Ron Renicki. The biggest question is, says Renicki, when is he cleared to start activities again? I think to build him up properly for next year, hopefully he can start getting on a strength program within the next couple of months. Make sure he's strong enough going into next year. If we're still looking at taking care of him in 2 or 3 months and he can't do physical activity, it's going to take a long time to build him up. So hopefully he's cleared before then and he can start getting his strength. So you understand what the timeline is there. If Rodriguez can't begin off-season workouts for another 2 or 3 months, he's going to be behind going into spring. And then it's going to take time to get him back into shape, get him throwing again. Because remember, this guy hasn't pitched since the end of 2019. They got him going a little bit here at the beginning of the year, but then they had to shut him down. So really, any substantive workload for Eduardo Rodriguez, he hasn't had anything in a year, and it could be close to a year and a half. Dave Bush, the pitching coach, 200 innings last year and zero this year. We're still figuring out exactly what we can expect from him next year and what's a reasonable amount so he can pitch and be part of the rotation, but also to make sure that we don't overdo it and don't put him in danger at that point. We're working on it. It's complicated for a lot of reasons. So now, I have to admit that with regard to Eduardo Rodriguez, I have been sort of a little, cavalier about what has sidelined him. I sort of have looked at it and said, Eduardo Rodriguez got COVID. He then got myocarditis as a result of COVID. And they had to shut him down, which is the right thing to do because they sucked anyway. But he'll recover from this, and then he'll be ready to go at the start of next year. I've said that to myself over and over and over again, which I admit is a pretty cavalier attitude when you're talking about someone's heart. But when I read this story, I really started to ask myself and say, what if this guy can't pitch? Or what if he comes back and he can't pitch as effectively, or certainly can't start the season? Can you imagine Jimmy Stewart going into next year with the exact same rotation you have this year? Martin Perez, Nathan Eovaldi, maybe Tanner Houck.
Nick Pivetta,
whom the Red Sox still won't bring up till next week because they don't want to trigger his service time and allow him to get to free agency too early.
Greg Maddux, also known as Ryan Weber.
So let me ask you, if that's the case, Jimmy, how would you feel about it?
Not great, Mike. Not great.
Murray, how about you? How would you feel about it if the Red Sox came back with exactly the same rotation?
Oh, good, because I could continue to laugh at them.
I mean, but wouldn't you be pissed on some level?
They're a disaster.
I mean, if you're a fan of the team, you can't possibly look at that and get excited about the team. You'll write off next year before it even begins.
I also can't see them spending money in free agency because you don't know what the economics of baseball are going to be next year.
So this is really, again, they're in a huge spot here. If Eduardo Rodriguez can't pitch, like, Sale's out for the first 2 months. You're not getting Sale back. And by the way, as we talk about Eduardo Rodriguez, I sort of think about the whole decision the Red Sox made with Chris Sale, and I say, oh, my God, you idiots. He should have had surgery at the end of 2019 when we all knew he needed it. They put it off until the spring, and you know what that meant? That he wasn't going to be ready for the start of 2021. Had he had the surgery in November of 2019, Chris Sale would be closing in on a year now. He might actually be even doing some throwing now. And again, I don't know where they actually draw the line in terms of playing catch, that sort of thing. But you get the idea. And maybe he wouldn't even be there, but it doesn't matter. By the time spring rolled around, he would have been 18 months out and pretty much ready to start the season. And pretty close to, certainly farther along than he would be next year. What a mistake that was. So again, Spear writes, with Eduardo Rodriguez now added to that potential void, the Red Sox were undone in 2020 by their inability to withstand the absences of Sale and Rodriguez. True. Now the team is planning at least to begin next season without Sale, while trying to find out more about precisely what it can expect next year from Rodriguez. In other words, writes Alex Spear, the test of the team's pitching depth, one that the Red Sox failed badly in 2020, almost certainly won't be limited to a single season. What? What? If you're a Red Sox fan, can you honestly, seriously accept this? Let me read that line again. The test of the team's pitching depth, one that the Red Sox failed badly in 2020, almost certainly won't be limited to a single season. So now, given that Spear is writing this, and Alex has his finger on the pulse of that organization, part of me can't help but wonder, is this the organization putting people on alert right now? On September 18th, don't expect any big moves during this offseason. What you're going to get next year is exactly what you got this year. Except we'll be a little bit better because we'll have Evaldi. We think Tanner Houck can help us. We'll have Martin Perez. And so again, let me ask you as a Red Sox fan, if they come back with the same rotation, which it feels like they're starting to hint at, if they were to come back with the same group, can you honestly take them seriously? Can you honestly do that? Would you buy tickets? Would you watch? Because I know you're not watching now. Not that I blame you. I don't blame you. I know you're not watching that. If they bring the same team back, how could you possibly invest anything in the Red Sox in 2021? How could you possibly do that? So again, phone lines are open, 617-779-0985. Sean's in Gloucester. Sean, what do you got?
Hey, Tony. So the dumpster fire that is the Red Sox this year, would you say that that would somewhat be remedied if, say, Cora came back and helmed the team again? Do you think that would affect how the squad plays and if that would give it any type of positive nudge in the right direction?
So, Alex, believe it or not, I would say, I'm sorry, Sean, believe it or not. Yes, I do. I think it would help a little bit to you.
I think so. I think they're rudderless. They don't have a skipper. And, I mean, the team hasn't changed that much from last year. There's a couple big moves that happened this year, but I think with proper leadership, I think that it could make a huge difference.
Okay, so look, again, I'm not that delusional about it, because I think if they don't have Sale and they don't have Rodriguez and they come back with the same rotation, you could have the greatest manager in the history of the game out there. It isn't going to matter. Now, what I will say is this. Alex Cora makes them at least a little bit more compelling. He has a presence. And independent of that, I'm looking at that's purely from a media perspective. I am interested in what Alex Cora says. I'm interested in how he approaches it. But a lot of that is contingent upon them having a good team. So I like Cora. I think Cora's a good manager, and I would bring him back in a second. I would. I would bring him back in an absolute second. But at the same time, if they don't have the pitching, forget it. Now, look, do I think Cora can continue to develop Rafael Devers, who has bounced back nicely here? Yes. Xander Bogaerts, yes. But those guys are having good years now, even without Cora, which I'm happy to see. Eduardo Rodriguez, another guy that Cora clearly had a positive impact on. So, yes, I think all those things can happen. And do I think that overall with Cora here, guys like J.D. Martinez would be more honest about playing it out rather than mailing it in? Yes. But if they don't have any pitching and they are intent or committed to really rebuilding this, which in some ways is good, but the idea of coming back with the same rotation they have right now, oh my God, will that be a disaster? Murray, how are we going to do this show next year?
I don't want to think about that.
Do I have to start thinking about that?
We'll worry about that when the time comes.
Now, again, a lot of time between now and then, but holy crap. Wow. The test of the team's pitching depth, one that the Red Sox failed badly, almost certainly won't be limited to a single season. Oh, great. That is just great. Alex Spear of the Boston Globe joins us next. I see a couple of you on the line. Don't go anywhere. We'll get to you, too.
This is the Baseball Reporters with Tony Mattis on 98.5.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
This is a show that's all about baseball. The Baseball Reporters with Tony Mass on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
All right, welcome back to the Baseball Reporters. I'm not going to waste any time here. We're going to get right to Alex Speer of the Boston Globe, who joins us via the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. He's written a couple things this week that I think are worthy of following up on. So I wanted to touch base with Alex about this. First of all, Alex, thanks for joining us, as always.
Yeah, of course, Tony. Good to talk to you, man.
Likewise. And so let me start with the Eduardo Rodriguez story. Okay, and again, the headline, Red Sox are already wary about Eduardo Rodriguez for 2021. And then this line at the end of it, Alex, the test of the team's pitching depth. Not the pitching depth, the pitching depth. You have plenty of pitching depth.
You can cover the ladder.
Former. Exactly. That's exactly right. The test of the team's pitching depth, one the Red Sox failed badly this year, almost certainly won't be limited to a single season. So, Alex, if you're a Red Sox fan and you hear that Chris Sale's going to be out probably until, maybe sometime in May or June at the earliest, and now Eduardo Rodriguez could be facing some sort of setback,
I want to be careful about characterizing that, because it's not so much we don't know whether or not there's a setback. It's just they have no idea exactly what kind of training program he's going to be able to follow.
Sure.
So it's more a question of even if he's cleared full go, fully healthy, after a year in which he has pitched zero innings. Like, it's difficult. Major league teams are wrestling with the question of what on earth does that mean going forward? Like, how do you regulate workload for a guy who wasn't even able to work out, let alone pitch? So I think even if he's healthy, there's a question about how much of a contribution he can make. And then there's this great unknown with a serious condition, myocarditis, which is that when you mention something that involves the heart, that is scary stuff. Then you have this looming question of exactly how much you can commit to the idea of Eduardo Rodriguez being a linchpin in the rotation. More importantly, you know, get him healthy, let him enjoy a normal, healthy life. But then beyond that, the Red Sox are certainly going to have to insure themselves, to make sure that, you know, they aren't left in the position they were this year when, you know, Chris Sale goes down and they did not have a major league caliber starter ready to step up.
Yeah, not even close, Alex. And again, look, I admitted this earlier on in the program tonight, which is I fall victim to the, you know, to the, my attitude is a little cavalier with Eduardo Rodriguez, because I sort of think of it as, okay, well, he had COVID, he got myocarditis, and but it is something that can go away over time. And, you know, and again, I'm not saying that my attitude's right. In fact, I'm saying the opposite. So I sort of read this and went, oh, my goodness. But what everything you wrote and said makes perfect sense. So my question is, if you're a Red Sox fan and you see this and you say, well, they can't possibly come back with the same pitching staff next year, how could they possibly do that? Do you have any indication that because they are committed to a rebuild, that the Red Sox would be willing to bite the bullet on the pitching staff and – you know, I'm not saying they would make no improvements, but there wouldn't be any major moves.
No, I don't think that is a. I don't foresee that happening at all. And in fact, to characterize this a commitment to a rebuild, I don't think, you know, based on the common understanding of a rebuild as like a, you know, you commit to bottoming out over a course of multiple years, and you completely overhaul the roster. Like that's not where they are. I think that they, you know, you remember what it was, what this team, you know, how this team operated in the middle of last decade, when the idea of, you know, where like that one down year in 2006 was viewed as being kind of a desperate circumstance, even though they ended up with 86 wins. And they went out and committed a ton of money to guys like Daisuke Matsuzaka and J.D. Drew and Julio Lugo coming out of that. I think that this is going to be more like the 2012 into 2013 offseason.
Right.
Because I don't think that they view themselves as necessarily knocking on the door in terms of their their overall organizational standing. Like, it's not a team that's primed for that, you know, for that major free agent splash, whoever that might be. Like, I'm a little bit skeptical that they would pursue someone like Real Muto or a Trevor Bauer, but I think that you're going to find a pretty aggressive acquisition of kind of complementary guys with the idea of being a competitive team. I don't think that they consider it to be acceptable to be this far out of playoff contention, particularly in this ridiculously expanded playoff pool.
Okay, and I'll tell you, Alex, I've compared where they are organizationally to 2012 on more than one occasion this year. I think that that's it's a good comp. I mean, they weren't quite ready to go out and contend for a World Series, but when they went out, what they got was some hardworking, gritty players who were going to give them a competitive team and maybe contend for a playoff spot. Now, what they got in 2013 was obviously the jackpot. I don't think they anticipated that, but I do agree that I think that is what their approach is probably going to be, something more akin to 2012 or 2013. While we're on that topic, let me ask you this. It's easy to say that now, but television ratings have dropped through the floor. Obviously, there have been no fans in the ballpark, and more importantly, there has been zero buzz factor with the Red Sox. Zero. During this ownership, historically, at times like that, they have been aggressive and gone out and made some big moves. Chaim Bloom, on the other hand, was brought in to go through a much more methodical, consistent restoration, maybe a better word, of their minor league system. Does ownership have the patience to let Chaim Bloom do the job on the rebuild?
I believe so. And again, I think that, you know, the characterization of the rebuild is like, you know, that's, I kind of think of what the Astros did in committing to being the worst team in baseball for a few years.
So, Alex, let me just cut you off and say, when I say rebuild, I really mean of the farm system. Okay. Of the farm system.
Well, right. So I think that the better way to think of it is in terms of like overall long-term, like young players, right? Because like, part of what Chaim Bloom did as one of his first gestures was acquiring a guy like Alex Verdugo, who's already in the majors. But you're right. Like, they're trying to add talent throughout the organization. And in answer to your question about whether or not they're going to be patient, when I wrote my book Homegrown about the Red Sox, building the championship core that led to the 2018 title in that historic season that now seems like a very distant memory.
Unbelievable.
I had a conversation with Tom Werner in the middle of that and thinking about the 2014 to 2015 transition that essentially set Ben Cherington up to be fired. And at that time, you know, he kind of looked back on the signings of Pablo Sandoval and of Hanley Ramirez, and he kind of, you know, grimaced a little bit and said something along the lines of proof of the proposition that you're better off being patient and going with homegrown. So, I think that there was an object lesson in that 2014 to 2015 season that you can't really shortcut things. You can't force round pegs into square holes, or probably more aptly, square pegs into round holes. I guess there was a very round peg that was involved in that offseason. I do think that there's a better sense of the long term, and a sense that, you know, this isn't going to be an overnight process.
Okay, look, Alex, I hope you're right, because again, if you tell me they've learned from their mistakes, then I think everybody's happy to hear that. At the same time, we want to see a competitive team on the field, and I don't think it's impossible. I think that they could make a couple of shrewd moves this offseason and give people a representative product next year, and at the same time still continue to restock their farm system. I would go even farther
and say it would be a failure if they don't do that, because I think that the market is going to be flooded with a lot of non-tenders this coming offseason, to the point where you have an opportunity to, you know, to really do a nice job of supplementing the roster. Look, like, Chaim Bloom had his hands tied in the same way that Cherington did going from when he inherited the team and going into the 2012 season. Cherington basically wasn't able to do anything in that offseason. Chaim Bloom only had a couple of shots to fire, right? One of them was on Martin Perez. Good pickup. One of them was on Jose Peraza. Not a good pickup so far. One of them was on Alex Verdugo. That's been, you know, for looking beyond the fact of there having been a trade of Mookie Betts, that's a good player to get back. So Kevin Pillar was a good addition, right? So thus far, the major league acquisitions that have been made when there have been resources to deploy for them haven't been, you know, there's not a reason they haven't shown someone who doesn't understand what he's doing, right? Like they suggest that at the margins, someone who's capable of finding complementary pieces, and the Red Sox are going to have to find a lot more complementary pieces this coming offseason.
Okay, and look, and if you're telling me it's a kind of market that has those sort of, call them budget signings out there, then that's great. I think that's exactly what they have in mind. To me, that's probably the right thing to do given where they are overall. You know, as I said, I just question whether or not they really have the patience to do it, Alex. But I want to ask you about something else you wrote here, and it relates to Chaim Bloom, which is earlier in the week, Tanner Houck made his major league debut. Pretty good one by all accounts. And I certainly, I admit, Alex, that I actually watched this one because I wanted to see Houck play. The Red Sox have been hard to watch this year, as you know, but I wanted to see Houck pitch. And I read your column the next day where you pointed out that at one point during the Theo Epstein years, the Red Sox had a host of pitching prospects in their system, Henry Owens, Anthony Renato among them. And there was an interesting comment from Ralph Truhl, who has been a roving pitching coordinator in the minor leagues for a number of years with the organization, 25 years, I think it is.
And so
this comment from Ralph Truhl caught my attention, Alex. Talking about the pitching prospects in the Red Sox system at that time, I always felt like, why didn't we get more out of them, said Truhl. It still sticks in my craw that we haven't had a homegrown starting pitcher. You'd like to see all homegrown talent in the big leagues. We've done a great job on position players. I felt like it was a good class of pitchers that came through, but it should have been better. So this is what I want to know about Bloom. Part of the reason everybody got excited about Bloom at the beginning, or at least bought in on what the idea was, Alex, was, okay, he's coming from Tampa, they can draft pitching, and they have good young pitching. I'm wondering if it's less about what Tampa has drafted and more about how Tampa develops. And I'm wondering, is there something there that Chaim Bloom can provide in terms of how to bring guys along that will give the Red Sox a better chance of hitting on these pitchers? Maybe we've already seen a little of it in Tanner Houck. Maybe this is the idea with Nick Pivetta. What have you been able to garner in terms of Bloom's knowledge from Tampa about the development of these pitchers that could help them?
Yeah, well, it's actually quite interesting because Tampa actually drafted relatively poorly.
Exactly, Alex.
Over the course of a long period of time. In the 2011 draft that made the Red Sox, because they got Mookie Betts and Jackie Bradley Jr. and Matt Barnes out of that one, as well as Travis Shaw and some other guys, the Rays absolutely blew it. They had 11 first-round picks, and basically none of them was worth anything except for Blake Snell, who it took a long time, but he came around and became a very important part of their team. But the development side, but the Rays have consistently had, despite some of those draft failures that they had until the last few years, they had consistently excellent pitching. And I do believe that it is a development thing. They do have Chaim Bloom was part of writing the Rays Way manual back in the day when they were getting, you know, the Andrew Friedman administration going. I do think that there are some, you know, some kind of simple alterations that we might see more of. Among them, kind of a more deliberate, methodical process for advancing prospects through the minors. And I think that they also did have really good pitching infrastructure in terms of helping guys to identify their strengths, helping them to move on from pitches that were going to be liabilities, and figuring out how to make it work for pitchers.
Sure.
They had a really, really good integrated infrastructure. And I do think that it's worth noting that I think that the Red Sox had actually in the last couple of years made some headway in that regard. They had a couple more player development successes on the pitching front than we'd seen in a while, whether that was guys who were already in the majors, such as Brandon Workman, reclamation projects such as such as like Marcus Walden and Ryan Brazier. And then they've gotten guys like Darwinson Hernandez and Josh Taylor up after helping them to tweak their pitch mixes. That's what Ralph Troyle was talking about when he was referring to the fact that there could have been a different developmental path, that you can be more proactive in terms of not just sitting around and waiting 7 years for Henry Owens to develop a viable curveball or to improve his fastball demand, but instead having, you know, a more data-driven approach to, okay, let's alter your grip this way, or let's tweak your arm slot slightly in this fashion. There's a somewhat more aggressive approach that's now going to happen in terms of that willingness to intervene in order to try to get more out of pitchers. And ultimately, the hope is that it does end up looking for the Red Sox like it has for the Rays for many, many years.
I mean, to me, that's what struck me, is it feels like there's been a change there. And I don't think that that's a small thing. Listen, I've already gone way over, but I need to ask you quickly, yes or no, is there a chance Alex Cora is back as Red Sox manager next year, if you had to guess?
I would guess there's a chance. I would say that is a yes on there being a chance.
Okay. Doesn't sound like a good one, though.
I don't have a great feel for it. I've got to be honest, Tony. I wouldn't dismiss it because he has such great relationships inside the organization. I do think that they need to, they will need something to reset the culture after this dreadful year. I don't think that Ron Renneke has done anything. I don't blame Ron Renneke.
Oh, it's not his fault, Alex. Not his fault.
But it's, you know, I think they'll need to, they need to turbo boost this thing a little bit.
Oh yeah, no question. Listen, thank you as always.
All right. Good to talk to you, Tony.
You too. Alex Speer, Boston Globe, again joining us via the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline.
It's the Baseball Reporters on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos. BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.